Hey, Last Looks crew, welcome to our annual Last Looks Oscars special episodes, where I interview all five teams nominated for their outstanding work. This is the 96th annual Academy Awards. The awards will be held March 10th at the Dolby Theatre in Hollywood. Every team is asked the same set of questions, but of course, they all give very different answers. Every year, the work is excellent, and this year is no different. I want to take a quick moment to thank all our Last Look sponsors. You truly help keep this little beast of a show going, and for that, I am forever grateful. If you would like to support the podcast, it's as easy as buying us a coffee. And when I say us, I mean me. Don't be fooled in thinking there is a team of podcast elves helping. You can find a link in the show notes of any of these episodes if you would like to show your love and support. My name is Jamie Lee, a film hairstylist living in Long Beach, and this is the Last Looks podcast, a show where I catch up with hairstylists and makeup artists working in the film and TV industries around the world. And today, in these Oscars special episodes, I'm speaking with all five Oscar-nominated teams for their outstanding work. Let's do this.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
John Blake's Wigs and Facial Hair has been providing the highest quality wigs and facial hair to the film, television, and live theater industries for 15 years. Our human hair wigs are low density and hand-tied on Swiss lace to give the most realistic and natural appearance that is undetectable in HD and 4K content. This small, family-owned company has grown to fill a vital role to artists across the globe. We provide an unparalleled customer service experience that is rare in today's retail market. Our facial hair pieces come in 17 different styles and colors that are designed to precisely mimic natural growth and coloring patterns. They are made from blending human and yak hair in order to create the most realistic texture and appearance of men's facial hair growth. We are grateful to be celebrating 15 years of being an industry leader and a vital part of your artistry.
And now, our feature presentation.
Pitch it up.
Last Looks. Rolling.
And action.
Welcome to the Last Looks podcast team.
Hello.
Thank you.
Hi. Thanks so much.
And congratulations on your Oscar nomination for your work on the film Golda.
Thank you, Jamie. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And the work being considered for the film is makeup and hairstyling for the character Golda, portrayed by Dame Helen Mirren. Now, if you could each tell us your name and what your position on the film was.
Yeah, I'm Karen Bartley-Thomas. I was the department head and hair and makeup designer.
I'm Susie Gillespie. I was the prosthetics designer.
And I'm Asher Kelly Blue, and I was the prosthetic makeup artist.
Incredible. So I would love to know, when you heard the news that you had been nominated, what was the first thought that came to mind? Talk me through it.
So I'm shooting out in Morocco, and Guy, our director, said to us, when they're announced, you've got to film yourself, and I've got a massive big Moroccan team out here. And we were filming in the Oscar Hotel. So it was very strange. I sort of drove in the morning, and I always try to put these things out of my mind. I don't think, focus on them too much. Looking at massive posters of Oscar winners and everything else. And we got into the makeup room with my team, and I've never heard absolute screaming like it. I mean, if you saw me on the tape, I am not quiet at the best of times. And it was literal screaming. I could not believe it. And immediately, you know, the phone goes mad, and it is a surreal moment. Very, very exciting moment. But it was very, very nice to be where I was in the Oscar Hotel with one of my close friends who's on my team and all my Moroccan team.
I think it's generous to use the word thought. Yeah, I was at work in the workshop, and I was with one of my team, Mia, and we were watching the broadcast together on ITV, and I was shock and tears because they announced it so fast. So I wasn't really ready because they just announced costume design. And I was thinking, God, I wonder what order it is. And then because I think Golda is so early in the alphabet, ours came up first. So it was actually more for me about, I couldn't really catch my breath. So yeah, as I say, I think my mind actually kind of went blank because I was mostly in shock. And I began to shake, genuinely. I was shaking and crying. not quite believing what had happened. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, it was kind of the thought of being recognised at such an early stage of my career. That was really overwhelming to actually hear that we'd been nominated. I've only been in the industry about 3 years full time now. So for me, it was just, yeah, I felt extremely grateful and privileged. Yeah, it was just overwhelming.
So if you could talk us through the character Golda, so makeup and hair wise, just from research and development through to daily application.
So I had the interview with Guy on a Zoom, literally half an hour, and we chatted about how he wanted to go forward with it. And obviously I know I'd worked with Helen, I'd done a film called The Duke with Helen, where she had to play a sort of dowdy cleaner. So, you know, I'm used to challenges with Helen. So we thought, okay, we'll take this on. It was, you know, it was the time, the turnaround was so short. So immediately I went into research. We had loads of research. Sinead Kidal, who's our costume designer, had already sort of got going. She had massive research footage, lots of fantastic information from Golda's family, her grandson in particular, who told us loads of stuff. How his grandma's hair looked when it was wet, how she did the bun, blah, blah, blah. You know, she had nicotine fingers, et cetera, et cetera. So then I sort of set about getting people involved. I phoned around, I got Susie on board, and then obviously needed the wig because we weren't 100% certain that we would go with prosthetics and wig and eyebrows and contact lenses, which we did in the end do. So I thought, let's get all the components together and see and use what we want to use. I phoned up Alex Rouse, who's always makes Helen's wigs. And I said, I need a wig in a month. And she said, no, sorry. And I said, well, I've got three little words for you, Dame Helen Mirren. And she said, okay, well, I'll have to do that then. So it all sort of, the ball started rolling. And really, if I'm honest, it was very much Guy, our director, who pushed for the prosthetics because I was unsure we could do it in the time. Helen was reluctant to have it. So it was very much, should we have the wig and the eyebrows, wig, prosthetics, some of the prosthetics. Susie made the prosthetics so that we could use some and not all. In fact, we had a chin, we didn't use it. So that was the first thing, to get all the components together. We didn't have Helen. I had to rush her to get a scan done and sent over to Susie, you know, which ended up with about 4 weeks to do it all in. So it was all very much really, really fast and unsure of what we would use in the end, sort of aiming towards a test that was a week before we shot when Helen came to see us. We didn't see her in the flesh before then. So it was very, very quick.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, what Karen said is that it was very quick. We had to move quickly and we had to make decisions, you know, very fast, but also we had to be very clear, I think, in the word go of what we thought was a good approach. So when I first spoke to Karen about it, we were aware of the fact that Helen hadn't had a makeup using prosthetics at this level at all before. And I'm very mindful of that, you know, I think an actor needs to be happy in what they're wearing, what they have on their face, obviously, to do their job, you know. And I think prosthetics can really overwhelm a lot of actors, and it's not to be sniffed at, the skill it takes to perform with them on. So Karen and I were both on the same page right from the start about how we wanted to do it, like a less is more approach. And it was about finding the essence of Golda by bringing the two of them together, not to sort of slap Golda's face onto Helen. We didn't want to lose Helen entirely. And that's an approach that really suits my style, I think, anyway, of design. I don't want to do too much anyway. And yeah, so in terms of that, once I'd received this print from, this 3D print from Vincent van Dyck in LA, it meant that we just had to hit the ground running. And yeah, basically we had to sculpt. So I sculpted it all, my team molded, and, you know, we cast it all. And basically, we had 3.5 weeks, pretty much. Or, I mean, just shy of that, to be perfectly honest, because our test, I think camera test was on the Tuesday of the fourth week. And we did a camera test. And like Karen said, we basically had all these individual elements. And I just made sure that the overlaps, like, they existed, but it just meant that they were so gentle that if we did think, oh, you know what, yeah, we don't need that piece, it meant that I didn't have to resculpt everything from scratch because we just wouldn't have had time for that. And obviously I didn't know that there's no way we were going to do a camera test and be like, bam, that's it, 100%. We had to have some wiggle room for making those changes. And there were a few, like Cara mentioned, we didn't use a chin. I tweaked the nose and I tweaked the cheeks and the neck, in fact. But we had just the rest of that week because we were filming on the Monday. And we did that mini makeup test with Helen in her kitchen on the Saturday, just to do a few little checks of a few things. And and then it was just go, go, go. So, I mean, Asha can probably tell you a bit more about how it was in the workshop, because we basically had, because Helen was in every day, so we had a lot to get up to speed with straight away.
Yeah. I'm kind of echoing what Susie and Karen said about how the time constraint that we had, but even on set doing the application, it was quick. We only had 2.5 hours to do everything, which included the wig when Karen and Annette would apply that. So that was also very much go, go, go. Like as soon as Helen had finished her cup of tea, it was stick everything on. But yeah, we had to just really move fast. But I think another thing that was in the daily application that we had was that the pieces was run so, so soft that we couldn't rush any part of the application, because any kind of like pull or tug on the pieces would read on camera, because it would just tug at her actual skin. As it is a little bit more mature, the elasticity is just going to be, you know, just going to nudge it slightly, and then it will just pull everything. So we had to be really, really slow whilst also being really, really quick. Yeah, it was just this mad balance. But I would, yeah, do the application with Susie, and then as soon as the finished look was done, I would rush back to the workshop and start running the pieces alongside the rest of the team. And then we would paint the pieces and then have those collected by Susie in the evening, and then we'd bring them onto set with us for the next day and apply them. And that was kind of a constant thing for six weeks. So yeah, it was pretty hectic, but I mean, it was an amazing, amazing experience. I mean, I wasn't even on the makeup test. So I think it was the first day of shooting. That was my first go at doing the makeup, and it had to be, yeah, damn good.
No pressure, Asha. No pressure.
Yeah, no.
I think also, I think the whole thing of this is that we knew Helen. Well, I knew Helen. And if you're going to achieve something like this, you need a very, very professional actor. And Helen was just dedicated to it. You know, she was committed to it. She sat there with her iPad looking at Golda, listening to Golda's voice in her ears. And you do have to have your actor on side, you know, with such a short time to get everything ready. And then, you know, you've got to be quick, because Helen was in every single day. I can't think of a day that she had off. So, you know, you can imagine it, can't you? It's the application in the morning and then removing it at night. So you've got to have someone like Helen. She's just a consummate professional and very on board. I mean, when we say she was reluctant, she really was reluctant. And I sort of said, come on, we'll try it. And I remember her looking in the mirror and saying, oh, yeah, we've got to have this. We've got to go with it. Because, you know, it's a long process for her. But, you know, she committed herself, and we're reaping the rewards of that, because, you know, it just all worked well and came together well in the end.
Yeah, like you say, once that camera test happens, she loved it, didn't she? She really, I think, you know, she
was committed to it, loved it.
She totally went in for it, and it was, yeah, it helped us so much.
I think the thing also with prosthetic makeovers like that people envisage it's going to be a full face of prosthetics and very restricting, and that's obviously the last thing you ever want to do to an actor is restrict their performance. And you need to keep an essence of Helen, and there's Golda in there, you know. So I think the perception was, oh, she'll have a full face of prosthetics, and she didn't. I mean, there were, I think, 6 pieces, weren't there, Susie? Something like that. It wasn't like that. It wasn't so sort of all-encompassing. Do you know what I mean? It was getting the right elements together. And that's, I think, why it worked so well in the end. No one part overtook the other. It all just worked so harmoniously together.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, I'd wanted I'd wanted to do, you know, an aging makeup, you know, like this. I mean, I know we weren't changing Helen's age dramatically, but she certainly looks a lot younger than Golda did at that time. But also about getting that convincing prosthetics to look and move like older skin. And I'd actually had a job in 2019. I was working on Morbius when I was freelancing for Conor O'Sullivan. And I was his sort of main silicone technician there. And we ran some pieces once with some low viscosity deadener, which is something I really like to use instead of Smith's with Plant Gel 10, because you can get really lovely runs with it because it's so much runnier. But the thing about it is the deadener, like the softness, actually is different to how Smith's works. So the percentages are not exactly the same. And a colleague of mine had run a neck piece that we didn't use in the end for Morbius, and he'd accidentally run it with way too much deadener. And we thought, what's going on? It's taking forever to cure. We've got all this material left over. What's happening? And then we demolded it, and it was super sticky in the bucket. But we actually managed to demold the piece, and it was beautifully soft. And I kind of worked out the maths afterwards and thought, I think you've run this at almost 300% or 350 something. That's crazy. But it felt beautiful. And we talked about it. I thought, God, you know what? If I ever do an older age makeup, this is the way to do it. Cut to 2 years later, and obviously this job comes along, and I thought, God, this is finally the opportunity to test that theory. So yeah, so when we went to running the pieces, you know, I said to my team, right, I want to push this, let's try it. And we tried 250, and it was nice, but I was like, oh, let's try it a bit more. And then we did 350. And it was gorgeous, but it was just a little bit too soft. My painter, Nikki, she was like, look, they're amazing, but it's not the easiest thing to paint in the world. So then we split the difference at 300. So it's with Platzl Gel 10 and LV. And the results are just, I think, phenomenal, because she really was able to move her neck and her face in such a way that it just looks to me like my grandma's skin. You know, it just really believably looked and felt like that. And actually, to be honest, I think it really helped Helen, because it probably felt less tight on her, you know, because I think she was very worried, because the neck piece was the most substantial piece of the lot. I mean, it was still only half of it, but it was quite chunky because we had to get that lovely profile to match Golda. So I do think the softness really, really helped. And we also ran our pieces with like incredibly thin cap plastic because a lot of our edges were exposed. So it's kind of what Asha says, that we had a challenge on our hands in terms of application. But I honestly think it's something that really excels for the makeup's final look, you know, because I don't know, I think otherwise there's something about, I don't know, it's a bit nerdy, so, but there's something to me about if a piece's softness, if it's competing against the skin that it's on, and as soon as you're at your remotes, you're going to see how their skin moves in a different way to the piece moves. Do you know what I mean? And I think it exposes those edges a bit more. So to me, that was paramount in getting right. And I'm so pleased it worked, because, you know, when you have those things you just want to try, and then when you finally have the chance to do it, it was really, really satisfying.
Yeah, that's really exciting. So moving on to a tricky one. Each year, the nominated films showcase such a wonderful range of work. So how do you feel your work differs from your fellow nominees?
God, that's such a deep question. I mean,
it's
you know, I mean, it's an obvious thing to say, but we're a smaller film. We're a very much a lower budget film, and we didn't have probably the time and the resources other people had. But ultimately, I think that's sort of immaterial, isn't it? It's what you see on the screen and what shines out. And if I'm honest, I think there's some amazing work there. I think ours holds up, and we're really, really proud of it. As it differs, I think, I don't know, actually. Susie, what do you say? Well, you've just said about the pieces and how it was made and all of that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think our processes definitely sets us apart. Again, I mean, it's very difficult to describe in an audio format, but yeah, the way we mold pieces and actually run pieces is very different. It's a technique that I learned when I worked for Conor O'Sullivan, actually. So we run our pieces without encapsulating the backs of them. And it actually, I think, to be honest, probably allows us to
push the silicon material to this level. I'm not sure how it fares, the more traditional method where you encapsulate your negative and your positive before you run your pieces. So that definitely sets us apart because not many people do that at all. I think that's Connor and probably Sangeet Prabhakar, who I've also worked with in the past. But yeah, because actually, weirdly enough, I mean, you take Maestro.
Yeah.
In fact, our work is very similar to Maestro, isn't it? Because in terms of doing that kind of likeness, obviously we're not taking Golda through her whole life, and that's in the same way they are, you know, with that biopic kind of format. I mean, ours, and actually I think which is, I suppose, difficult, is we've got a character who, you know, we're covering Karen Watt sort of a basically 2 weeks in a really intensive time with a few, obviously, scenes that are in a different, yeah, you know, different right, yeah. time, but most of it's concentrated to a really short space of time. And again, from a, so we're with the director intensely. And that continuity is obviously, as we know, shooting out of order, very, very difficult.
Very difficult. And also ours is really, I mean, we have other characters, obviously, in Liev Schreiber, absolutely amazing as Henry Kissinger. But, you know, you look at maybe Maestro and there are lots of other characters, aren't there? And as you say, it goes through the ages, which is amazing. And to see the aging at the end, I think is stunning. But ours is really all around one woman, literally one woman. And ours is, I mean, you know, they're all very amazing actors in these films, but ours is such an iconic woman being Helen Mirren, you know, playing another iconic woman. That, I think, was possibly one of the most difficult things to get our heads around and to achieve, because Helen Mirren is, you know, an icon, isn't she? And you don't want her to disappear within the character. You must, obviously, she has to look like Golda. And that is actually quite a difficult thing to do, I think, without swamping Helen, not doing enough. It's sort of finding the balance. And I think that's why we decided, we had teeth as well that we didn't actually end up using ultimately. That's why we decided to go for so many different components, not just because of the time, but we just needed to get essence of a very famous woman from another famous woman. And, you know, all eyes were on it, I think, for that reason, you know, and hopefully we achieved it. But maybe that's something that does set us apart. And the whole thing around her, to have her in every day with all of that and continuity, as you say, Susie. Yeah, I mean, it was intense, I would say that.
Yeah, beautifully answered, guys. So kind of continuing on from that, what did you each find to be your biggest challenge during filming?
I mean, Susie's already mentioned the fact that the pieces had exposed edges, but I honestly think that was one of the biggest challenges because the pieces were, you know, coming just under her cheekbones and going like across her face in some areas. And the neck as well, like it's not the full neck, it's kind of half and then part of her neck. But it's so difficult to mask edges when there's so many close-ups, especially in this film. You know, we're zooming right up into her eyes and you can see everything. And I think getting that flawless basically day in, day out, and making sure that you can't see the edges and that it's just perfect on camera was, yeah, a massive deal. And another thing was that, you know, when we were doing our application in the morning, 2 hours, but it was, we had to get everything like perfect because we also had minimal checks on set, which meant that we had to just basically preempt any issues like prosade around, you know, the mouth to make sure that when she was emoting, it wasn't all lifting up by the end of the day. I'm sure Susie can talk more about the fact that there were not very many checks on set, but that was definitely something that we always just had to be really aware of when we were doing our application. And another thing that was just so lovely is that making sure that Helen was, you know, comfortable in the chair and, you know, she's stress testing all the pieces and stuff. But when we were doing our application, yeah, she ended up calling us fairy fingers because we were just so delicate, especially around her eyes. Yeah, just making sure that everything was done perfectly. But yeah, definitely a challenge with those edges.
I love it.
I think for me, but by the time you get to shooting, you sort of hope that everything is in place. Well, it was in place. And, you know, it's very difficult being a makeup artist because you are almost expected to be a scientist, if you know what I mean. It's expected to be same day in, day out. It's really difficult. And as the head of a department, it was quite a stressful thing, making sure everything came together all right, making sure Helen was happy, you know, giving her as much space as she needed, just sort of pulling everything together. And it's quite stressful. You sit on a set where suddenly the director's going so close on an eye, where there's a contact lens in it that's brown that wasn't a hand-painted contact lens. You know, I'm having to do some contact lenses for the job I'm on now. And we've got 6 weeks to get them hand-painted. I was whipping down to the local opticians and finding the best brown contacts. You know, it was a constant, every day, get Helen in, get it done on time, get her on set, maintain it, everybody on song, you know, around one actor, as we said previously, when it is one actor in all of the time, that there's nothing alleviates the stress around the makeup and the hair. You know, normally you're in a show that you could have 5-6 big leads, but this was all Helen. So, yeah, I would say for all of us, it was quite a stressful experience from that point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I think the guys have covered it fairly well. For me, it is 100% those close-ups, man.
You stop breathing while that's happening.
I mean, we had the most incredible DOP in Jasper Wolf. And the stuff he did is just stunning. But yeah, I think the first time he went in for one of his famous full-eye close-ups, like Karen mentioned, was I think it was on at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And Karen and I were by the monitors. And I remember we grabbed each other's hands going, what's happening? We just thought, oh, Jesus Christ.
It's stressful. But the thing is, though, the funny thing is about, I think, that when you see it and it all works, because I kept looking, thinking, oh, it's got to be something on around the prosthetics or the contact lens. And when there is nothing, you go from hating Guy and Jesper to loving them because they're weird. You know, I would, the amount of times, Guy, what are you doing? And then when it all works out and you see it on the big screen, you think, oh, yeah, thanks, Guy. But, you know, at the time, obviously, it's massively stressful.
Yeah. I mean, because like Astra kind of touched on it about how minimal the checks were. Because basically, you know, because Helen, kind of very, you know, very politely, you know, sort of explained to me that, you know, when she's working, she doesn't want a makeup artist coming down constantly every time the opportunity there is for checks. She was like, look, if you have to come down, it's important, obviously, of course. She's like, but if you don't need to, please don't, because I'm you know, I'd rather just, kind of get on with it and all the rest of it. So, yeah, so I was kind of watching the monitors like a hawk to make sure nothing major happened. And I have to say, she looked after that makeup so well, because we all know actors sometimes don't do that. So she was very, very good with it. But the main thing that was really tough was that basically because I think we were doing continuous working days, right? So it was a very, very tight schedule. But because, you know, like Helen had such a like strenuous schedule, you know, in every day, like Karen said, oh, she's starting with the application, then D-rig, all of that. In the middle of the day, when she would have her lunch, she would also have like about sort of 20-minute kind of just time to yourself, just break, basically. But once that was done, we had to get back on set to get filming. So we didn't have after lunch checks as standard. And that's something I would always expect to have for prosthetics, you know? And so I had to get used to that. You know, I had to get used to kind of being okay with the fact that I didn't have the opportunity to have a real proper look at everything.
Yeah.
So any time, like Ashley said, we had to start the day making sure everything was flawless so that my checks were kept to an absolute minimum. So like Karen said, I don't think there was a single shoot day that I wasn't bricking it in some way, shape or form, expecting something to go wrong, because it always does at some point with prosthetics. You just never know. So yeah, I think that was, to be honest, really, really tough. But it definitely got easier the more I started to trust what we were doing. And because I think, like Karen said, this close-up started off being horrendous. But actually, once we knew that what we were putting forward could hold up to it, it was a real joy, because when they would go in and they'd really get that beautiful detail that we'd obviously all worked so hard to put in, how lovely for it to have its moment to shine, you know?
Yes. So it that's so true.
Never made it easier, but it was nice, you know, and it took a while, but But I think, yeah, I think every single day it had that high octane worry, yeah. I think, because of it.
Absolutely. I love that. So were there any standout lessons learned? I think we normally get to the end of a project and hope that we can take some lessons away. So what might they be for you ladies?
Don't do it again. Standout lessons. Well, do you know, interestingly, I think, honestly, if it, on a practical note, you know, you all, it always gets pulled through somehow, whatever the challenge, we always do it. But certainly I was reluctant about it in the beginning. And when I spoke to Guy, I thought, I'm actually not sure I can do this. And you don't ever want to do something as big as this badly. Better not to do it. Mm. But actually, if you really put your mind to it, it seems, it can be achieved. Yeah. So I think going forward, I wouldn't turn a project down that was like this. I would sort of welcome it with open arms and get on with it. And really, that's Guy, definitely Guy, to thank for that, because he was the one that pushed and said, we really can't do it without prosthetics. Go for it. And we did. So I think that's what I'd say. I think possibly I'm a bit braver going forward.
Nice. Love it.
You know, we're a smaller studio and, you know, this is a huge high-profile actor, like Karen has said, helming the entire film. It's all about them. You know, there's nowhere to hide. And I definitely feel that, yeah, should something similar come along, I absolutely feel much more confident that, of course we can take that on. But like I said, to be honest, I did have that belief at the time when Karen, you know, spoke to me about it. It was just a bit more scary. But I actually think for me, it's that I need to, I don't know, I think I can trust my gut is what I'm trying to say, because a lot of the decisions we had to make fast, and we had to be confident with all of those decisions. And when I was sculpting it, when Karen and I talked about the approach we were going to do, when we decided about doing the softness of the pieces, all of these things, having exposed edges, because, you know, some people have asked me, why would you do that to yourself? Why would you, you know, making it so much harder? But it was like, it was the right thing for Helen, and it was the right thing for this makeup. And I knew in my gut that it was, and it was very scary to make decisions like that, knowing we didn't have a chance to really redo it. But yeah, I like having got to the end of this job thinking, you know what, my instincts as a, you know, a prosthetics designer are sound, and don't question it too much, because I feel like, I don't know what it is. You know how, like, if you're under pressure, sometimes you just make the right call. Whereas if you overthink it, sometimes it can lead you down a path. And I feel like this is a really good example where that pressure kind of, it narrowed my focus in a way that I think is really helpful to take forward.
Yeah, I think it's similar again. It's the fact that I realised massively that I'm capable of dealing with a lot more than I initially believed. Susie knows this, but this is like my first big film that I've ever done. So immediately I was quite nervous. And I was also taking on a lot where it was, yeah, application, running the pieces, painting them. So there was a lot kind of riding on my responsibilities. But it just, yeah, it massively pushed me and maybe all of us beyond our perceived limits of what we could achieve in such a short time frame as well. And yeah, just showed me that growth and success just lie past our comfort zones. And I think that's something that holds a really special place to me. And I kind of take that on in everything that I do, like social events or other jobs, just kind of being like, you can do it. And yeah, this job kind of taught me that. So
perfect.
Also, I think what we haven't said is that I think all of us, and certainly Susie and I, when we spoke about it, it is a job of dreams. You know, we all do amazing, fantastic work. We're so lucky. But to get that job with Helen, even though it was scary, even though can we do it on time, it's just not something you turn down. Not working with her and not doing that kind of makeover on her, you know, you might get that once in a lifetime. And I really mean that. You know, there aren't many, if you think of films like it. Of course, we've got the maestro in there now, as you say, but you know, that sort of thing. It was a job of dreams. So that focused us all, and we just sort of hit the ground running and thought, right, we're doing it. It really, really was a job of dreams.
That's amazing. And as we all know, ladies, it takes a team. So did you want to take a moment to give a shout out to those that helped you on the project?
Oh, yes, Jamie, thank you. I would love to thank my wonderful team, Christine Fidler, Rick Taylor, Annette Gray, Lily Rogers, Monica Montalvo. to Alex Rouse, who made the wig, Sarah Weatherburn, who made the eyebrows. Yes, I mean, Chris at Fangs Effects did the teeth. We didn't use them, but he's wonderful. And it's so true. This really was a massive, massive team effort. And I have the most amazing team that I go forward with. So, yes, thank you so much to all of them. And, of course, the guy, Jane Hook, Michael Kuhn, all of the wonderful producers, Gavin Glendening, everybody involved in the film. It really was a kind of family affair, like an absolute. And Sinead Kidal, whose costume, who is sensational at her job. So it's a team effort and everybody sort of came together at the top of their game. So thank you to everybody.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, the prosthetics team did such a good job over at my company, Red Girl. So aside from the lovely Astra, so Nikki DeJong, she established the paint job for me and stayed on for the first sort of couple of weeks doing that. Bless her, while she was preparing to move back to Austria. So big shout out to her. And in the workshop team, I had Renee Taylor, Rachel McCruskey, who were my prosthetics artists. So they were doing most of the molding and the silicon running. Renee also did a little bit of extra sculpting for me. And then my trainees were Jodie Story and Magdalena Rosa, who helped with silicon running as well, a little bit of molding. And then Raj Pashal came on towards the end of the job to help with the painting as well. We've mentioned Vincent, but worth saying again, to Vincent van Dyke Effects, for helping us with such a quick turnaround on that scan and 3D print of Helen in the first place. Oh, actually, you know, I also really want to say thank you to Lucy Sibbick, because she was so kind to me in that first week of application. I was trying to find, you know, certain products that would be good for Helen, because there were certain things that I would usually use that weren't doing so well for her. And Lisa was incredibly generous and kind to give me a few pointers because of her experience with Gary on Darkest Hour. So, yeah, it's you're never where you are without the support of other artists, even if they're not working on your job. So
absolutely. Ashra, you have anything to add?
I mean, it's the same as Susie, the Red Girl team. She's already said them all. But I mean, yeah, again, just massive thanks to all of those girls and Raj as well, because coming back from application back into the workshop every day, it's like Susie says, like the support network that you have with your team is so important. And, you know, they had my back and I had theirs, and it was, yeah, it meant a lot. So yeah, big thank you to all of the Red Girls.
Awesome, makes all the difference. Okay, ladies, so a massive congratulations again. Enjoy the ride and thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much, Jamie.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jamie.
Thanks, bye-bye.